What's up, everybody? Thank you for tuning in to another episode of the All In Podcast. I am one of your co-hosts, as always, Eli Cooper, and I'm joined, as always, by my co-host, Mike Badzik. How's it going, Brody?
It's going great. How are you, sir?
I'm doing good, man. Can't complain.
Good.
And we have a special guest with us today, a frequent collaborator on the podcast, our guy, Todd. Has joined us again today. What's up, man?
You know, number four for my boy. I'm feeling good. Life is good, man. Got some fall weather. I don't know. I'm feeling great right now. Sports, football, full effect. I love it.
Yeah.
Can't complain. Yes, LeBron has won his fourth NBA title. It's been the first time we've had Todd on since then.
Yeah.
And normally Todd's our NBA guy, I guess, because it was NBA season. But Todd has joined us today to talk about way more than NBA. We're going to talk about some NFL Week 7 coming up. We're going to talk about the MLB World Series, tied 1-1 right now between the Rays and the Dodgers. But first and foremost, we have to talk about, you know, because, you know, I'm hosting today, so we have to talk about Bird Gang and the Eagles' comeback victory, 22-21 against the Giants, division leader, the NFC East. Carson Wentz is the best quarterback in the league.
Oh,
all that today. No, I'm just kidding. we definitely got to kick it off with the Thursday night game.
Yeah.
It was not looking good, I'm not going to lie, for my Eagles, especially late. I think Giants went up 20-7 with about 7 minutes left, and the Eagles scored two late touchdowns to end up pulling it out. So I'll let you guys start before I rant about the Eagles. Todd, what were your thoughts on the Eagles-Giants Thursday night game?
Honestly, I threw up in my mouth so many times during the game. if I'm totally honest, I don't know. The more I think about it, the Giants and the Eagles. Literally don't know. I mean, it was just an NFC East ugly game. The whole time I'm thinking, Eagles are going to pull this out. And then the moment I really kind of give hope up on the Eagles, and then they pull it out. I don't know. I mean, at the end of the day, my biggest thoughts are that, like, the Eagles win this division. I think that was my, I don't know, my takeaway. I just think that they're the least, and if I don't know. I think they have the best chance right now to, I mean, obviously they're in first, but I mean, with Dak going down, Giants are a mess, Washington's a mess. Somehow we're getting a playoff team out of this division.
Yeah, so truth be told, I didn't watch this game live last night. I had some plans with some friends and then ended up playing some hoops. So I missed the game live. I was able to catch the highlights and hear about it and everything. But I will say, while I was hooping, so I think Todd and Taylor, our good friend Taylor, both had the Eagles giving 5.5 last night. And while I was hooping, I checked my phone about an hour into the game. Maybe I think I had about 95 text messages from those two guys, and all of them were, "Oh my God, the Eagles! What is this? What is this? What is going on? Oh my God, Doug Peterson, he's the worst! Oh my God, Wentz!" But they won the game, right? So I think they deserve some credit of all of the mess that it was. They're able to pull a game like this out, so I think that matters a little bit, right? You know, especially if you're trying to build towards something. Obviously, it hasn't been what they planned so far this season, right? I think we can agree that 2-4-1 is not the start that they envisioned or a start that anybody hoping to win their division would have envisioned. But here they are, like Coop said, in first place. You know, they have, I think, probably what we would say is by far the best quarterback in this division right now, right? We certainly don't think Andy Dalton is close to the level of Carson Wentz. Closer than it should be, maybe, right? But who knows who's going to be starting in Washington. They're probably the only other team. And then you have the Giants, who Danny Dimes, and by the way, remember when everyone was apologizing to Danny Dimes on TV because of that one good game he had after everyone said he was going to be a bust? So I will say, you know, I think it shows a little bit that the Eagles were able to win a game that looked like they were going to lose, and they didn't give up anyway, right? This is something we talked about last week, Coop, against the Ravens, where they were down big and they didn't give up, and they ended up, they didn't quite win that one. They needed a 2-point conversion to send it to overtime that they didn't get. But here, you know, they're able to pull it out against a bad team. Maybe it shouldn't have been this close, but I think maybe we give a little bit of credit just for winning the actual game.
Yeah. I mean, from our perspective, or from my perspective at least, it was a typical Eagles game. I don't know what it is about this Eagles offense this year. And maybe it's because of all the injuries and moving pieces, but they don't seem to be able to get off to decent starts, like in any way, shape, or form. It takes us forever for the offense to get going, and it puts us behind the eight ball. And then Carson Wentz eventually figures it out, and the offense gets going, and they eventually, you know, put up enough points to either come back and win, or, you know, come back and lose by a few, kind of like what they did against the Ravens, and they've done it a few times over the season. And I'm just imagining, like, if we could just come out ready to go, I can only imagine what our record would be, you know, because they've had some winnable games, certainly, you know, so far to start the season, even with a tough schedule.
Yeah.
But one thing I think they did a lot better towards the end of the game was start to use the running backs in the passing game. Like, for some reason, we've gotten away from that. Our screen, the Eagles have, you know, for years, since Brian Westbrook, have been a team that has, you know, utilized the screen game to get their backs out in open space. And we have good pass-catching running backs. So, for the life of me, I cannot understand why we've gone away from that. Like, even with Miles Sanders healthy, you know, he'll get a couple catches here and there. But for some reason, they're not utilizing that area of the game, especially when you have a banged-up line, where Wentz needs to get the ball out of his hands quicker. I think that's his biggest problem right now, is that he's back there holding the ball forever, and the pocket is consistently collapsing on him to the point where, like, early on in that game, he couldn't step into throws because the pressure was coming right into his face, and he's kind of just having to get it out of his hands, and it led to that ugly interception that he threw, you know, things like that. So, to me, well, how do you relieve pressure? It's the screen game, checkdowns. Like, utilize your running backs, run shorter passing routes, get the ball out of his hands quicker. For some reason, we have these, like, slow developing, forever taking plays that aren't working. And then eventually, you know, right. And then eventually, you know, the offense kind of gets going and, you know, it starts to kind of pick up a bit. But you can't do stuff like that against the Ravens, like last week. You know what I mean? Like, it almost worked for you, but you don't want to be that far behind against good teams, you know, in my opinion. So
I just want to, like, respond directly. So watching that game, I'm not, you know, an Eagles fan. I'm a Pittsburgh fan. But as Mikey said, you know, I was cheering for the Eagles for this game. I think a lot of it goes to Doug Peterson. Okay. I think the 2-point conversion plays were just, I mean, again, I'm in this moment, I'm cheering for the Eagles. They were god awful. Okay. I think a lot of situational stuff is not great. But the stuff you're saying, Coop, I totally agree with everything you just said. I put that blame on Carson Wentz. I think he is almost at this point, I don't know if incapable is the word I want to use, but he does not seem willing to have the quick pass game, the screen, you know, I don't know, to be the check down-ish quarterback that you need to be sometimes.
Right.
There are just plays in that game where I'm watching him, and it's just – it's so frustrating because, you know, that final drive where it's like he is driving down the field, he's making these crazy passes, but during the course of a game, there are times where he just cannot come down to earth, where he cannot make the smart play you need to make sometimes. And that – I mean, it was just – it was so I can't imagine being an Eagles fan because that was so infuriating watching that.
Well, I think, Coop, I think you mentioned a good point about the long developing plays – right, and doesn't really have the ability to check down or anything like that. Well, like Doug Peterson, like we know, he's part of this Andy Reid coaching tree. And Andy Reid, to his credit, a lot of times has these long developing plays. A lot of times they work for Andy Reid, right? And he gets he's super creative. It's super innovative when he has these long developing plays because they work, right? Like, here's the thing about the Eagles, though. It's tough to do those long developing plays when, one, you don't have the offensive line. Yep. We know the offensive line struggles have been there. And then you also don't have receivers who can get open quickly. So I think it puts you in a tough spot as a play caller sometimes. Now, with that being said, I think Peterson could be doing a lot better job. But, you know, I'm kind of with Todd on this too, with Wentz. Like, he also has to show the ability to do those checkdowns and, like, not want to get the big play every time. It's tough in the, you know, he doesn't always have the cleanest pocket. And he's working with receivers who aren't exactly ideal. So maybe he gets some credit there. But, you know, they're 2-4-1. And again, they won the game, right? So we're bashing them right now. But again, they won the game. But I think it's been Peterson and Wentz both this season. When you mix that with the injuries they've had, and it's been a rough go so far. With that being said, they're the favorite for the NFC East.
Yeah. Somehow, some way, we're still the favorites to win the division and possibly make the playoffs. But yeah, to piggyback off that, it's incredibly frustrating, Todd. It is to watch Carson Wentz be a really good quarterback in some points of the game and be an awful quarterback for 90% of it. It's the most frustrating thing in the world. So let's get on to our week 7 preview. Sunday's games have quite a few intriguing matchups coming up, starting with I know Mike's a Steelers fan. Todd, you're a Steelers fan too, I believe, right?
So yes, sir.
Go ahead and talk about your team now. Undefeated matchup.
Yep.
Steelers 5-0, Titans 5-0, headed into this week 7 matchup. What's the keys? Let's talk about that first for your guys' Steelers team to get a win this weekend.
Take it away, Mike.
Well, for me, it's the running game. It's keeping the ball out of Tennessee's offense, because you know that they're going to pound the ball, right? We know that Derrick Henry is going to get his 4.5 yards a carry, and they're going to be able to control the ball. Ryan Tannehill has been we were talking about this earlier. Ryan Tannehill has been one of the best quarterbacks in the league the past 2 years. If you match up his numbers with Mahomes, it's almost identical. It's kind of weird. And he hasn't really gotten maybe the credit he deserves, but he's been unbelievable. So I think Tennessee actually offensively can match the Steelers for a lot of what they like to do. They're actually not that dissimilar than the Steelers offense in how they spread the ball around and try to run the ball. But it's a lot easier for them to run the ball. A lot of it has to do with Derrick Henry. A lot of it has to do with that offensive line. Now, Taylor Lewan went down last week. That could be a big injury for them on the offensive line. But if the Steelers can control the ball, right, I'm talking like 6, 7, 8 minute drives and end them with touchdowns, I think the Steelers have an advantage here. Now, here's the thing, though. The Titans are a very good team. I'd say the Titans are the best team that Steelers have played so far this year, for sure. And this is all on the road. So it's a tough matchup. Those are the keys for me, though. If the Steelers can run the ball, I think, you know, Big Ben and, you know, the much maligned Big Ben has been great this year, right? He's not turning the ball over. He's making great decisions. So I don't think he is going to be the one who hurts us here. It's if we can't establish a run and we get Big Ben in these third and long, second and long, if we're running the ball on first down and it's still 2nd and 9, like, that creates a problem for this offense. And I know Todd is the analytical football guy here, and he would probably say throw some short passes on first down and get, you know, 2nd and medium, 2nd and shorts. But that's not what they do a lot of the time. So I think running the ball for the Steelers is what's most important for them anyway.
So the thing that I'm looking at most for this matchup is Devin Bush, ACL injury, out. And I don't know. I mean, in a lot of ways, to me, heart of that defense, middle linebacker, I would say best middle linebacker they have. But, I mean, going out, I think that they're going to be able to, at the end of the day, match the physicality that Derrick Henry brings. I think that's a lot of defenses can't necessarily match the – and, you know, match is a strong word. But I think that they're going to be able to meet Derrick Henry a lot better than other teams would be able to. But for me, I think the Steelers have a distinct advantage in the secondary. I think the Steelers have the best 4, you know, 1 through 4 wide receivers in the league. Ben is being Ben. I think that they can exploit that, the Tennessee secondary. I think, you know, Houston had their way. Yeah. I think Houston really should have won that game last week. And, you know, it's football's football. But I think that coming in, the Steelers are feeling themselves. Mike Tomlin's going to have them prepared. I think that this is going to be a big – I mean, obviously both teams have this circled, but I think especially considering, I don't know, the COVID situation, I feel like the Steelers have the the emotional edge. I think the Steelers are rolling. I think they have everything they got for him right now. And at the end of the day, I think that, like I said, that's secondary. If it's a close game at the end, I'm taking the Steelers, the offense at the end. I think the Steelers offense at the end will be able to, as long as Tennessee doesn't get out to a big lead. You know, if Tennessee gets out to some other type of league and they're able to drain clock with Henry, that's a different story. But I expect this to be a close game. And I think that Steelers offense, in the, especially in the fourth, the second half, will be able to carry them to a win.
Yeah, for me, you know, they use the expression cut off the head of the snake, mm-hmm. right? In this case, that is Derrick Henry. So that's your first and foremost thing coming into any game plan is to stop Derrick Henry. Because even as good as Ryan Tannehill has been, I would still say the game plan is to make Tannehill beat you rather than Derrick Henry. If Derrick Henry runs for 200 yards like he did last week, you're not going to win. So, you know, that's where you want to force Ryan Tannehill to be great, which a lot of times he has been, but that's still your best bet when facing this Titans offense. And it's going to be interesting to see how the Steelers do that with, you know, a guy like you mentioned, Devin Bush, being injured. He's, you know, one of the hearts of that defense. You could argue that there's multiple guys who could be that, you know, person, but especially in this one, in a game so crucial to stopping the run, not having Devin Bush is going to be a big piece. So I think that's something to look out for and see how that impacts the Steelers' ability to stop the run. But if you ask me, you know, I would say the Steelers' defense overall is still good enough. Their front seven, even without Devin Bush, is still elite. So I still think they're good enough to get the job done. And I don't think the Titans' secondary is quite good enough to handle this Steelers' passing attack. And to me, I think that makes the difference. And if the Steelers can get out ahead first here and then control the tempo of the game from their end rather than vice versa, I think that bodes well for them. So I do have the Steelers staying undefeated in this one. I'm going to go 27-23 Steelers. I do think it's going to be close. I'm going to take the Steelers by four to remain undefeated.
I like that score. And like Mikey said, though, the Taylor Lewan injury, I think, is going to be bigger, though, than the Bush injury in the sense that those Steelers edge rushers are legit.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
So I would say that's a pretty good score. Give me Steelers 31-21.
I will go Steelers 34, Titans 6.
I like that better.
No bias in that whatsoever. All right, so let's get on to Niners and Pats. Two teams, Niners sitting at 3-3, Pats sitting at 2-3. The Pats have struggled recently. Obviously the COVID situation that they had with Cam Newton, and then also, you know, their bye week being changed played a big factor and kind of stopped their momentum. They were off to a good start from what I thought. And then that kind of, you know, they lost to the Chiefs, and now I believe have lost two straight with the loss they had last weekend. And Cam Newton does not look good throwing the football, at least as of last game. So let's talk about this one a little bit. Can the Pats get back on track against this 49ers defense?
So for me, I think yes. Okay, first of all, I'm taking Bill Belichick out of a loss. I think they're coming back this week. And for me, the biggest – it's COVID season. Like, we all know this. But I think the fact that Cam didn't get that full week, all these other issues, whatever. I think Cam's coming back this week, had a full week of practice, Bill Belichick off a loss. I think the Niners were in one of those games last week where they were kind of back against the wall kind of things. I think they're still pretenders at the end of the day. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, I like the Pats coming out of this.
Yeah, so, you know what? I was just thinking about this. And you know who really sucked in the NBA bubble?
Who?
Russell Westbrook. this is what I'm saying, though. Like, do we know that COVID doesn't affect people after they're over it, per se? Like, athletically, anyway, right? So I've hooped with Todd after he had COVID. That guy, he was not getting buckets the same way. I don't know what it was. I don't know. He was not getting buckets. I'm just kidding. I don't even know if he had COVID. So anyway, so I will say, like, I don't know if there's anything to that. But I don't know who these Pats are, right? Like, who are the Patriots? Are they this power rushing team that we saw the first couple weeks? Are they this team that wants to air raid like they did against Seattle? What happened to this defense we saw last year? And I think this defense last year, this is something I brought up and when we did our season preview pod, was, you know, they were a little bit reliant on the turnovers last year, right? And we tend to see teams that are reliant on turnovers, defenses anyway, they tend to regress. And that's kind of what we're seeing here, right? They have not been the same defense. Also, they had a bunch of guys opt out before the season. That probably is affecting you too. So I'm not sure. I'm not sure who these Patriots are. I think it'd be easy to say, like Todd said, like Belichick coming off a loss. Like, yeah, I agree with that. I like Belichick coming off a loss too. I also like Belichick with having 2 weeks to prepare against Denver, right? And that didn't work out. So I'm not sure what I'm going to see out of these guys. I think the Niners are actually kicking it on a little bit. You know, they know who they are, right? They're run the ball. Let's get innovative running the ball. Not ask Garoppolo to do too much. I don't think the Patriots know what they want to ask of Cam Newton yet, right?
Yeah.
So I like the Niners here. I like the Niners. I think, and I'm not sure about the Patriots defense either here. So if I'm giving a score, my score prediction would be, I think I'd go Niners 29, Patriots 17.
Okay, so you've got Niners by double digits.
I do.
Right. So, yeah, I'm going with the Niners in this one too. Simply because I have no faith in this Patriots offense, you know, and I don't know that they have the receivers that can get open consistently enough. Mm-hmm. Against a 49er secondary that hasn't been awful or really bad at all. They've actually been pretty good given all the injuries that they had up front that's impacting their pass rush. So I don't think that goes well for the Pats. Maybe they're able to run the ball a little bit better in this game, and I think that would be huge for them. But that offense looks out of sync. They don't really have anyone who could stretch the field or be like a deep threat for them. And teams are essentially just kind of taking away Edelman and taking him completely out of games and saying, throw the ball to anyone else. Mm-hmm. We'll live with N'Keal Harry or I think Damian Bird is one of their other receivers. Like, we'll live with those guys, you know, beating us. We'll stop the run and we'll take all the underneath stuff away from Julian Edelman, and it's working. So I don't know. They're going to have to figure out some ways to kind of scheme Julian Edelman open offensively to get themselves back in sync, which is not easy to do against a 49ers defense that is still playing really well. So I'm also taking the Niners in this one. I think this one's going to be low scoring. I'm going to go Niners 20, Pats 13.
Like it.
I like that. And yeah, real quick point, I agree, Mikey. The fact, I think the Patriots were number one that had the most defensive guys opt out because of COVID. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I don't know. I totally agree with all the points you made, Cube. I don't trust the Patriots offense, all this stuff. I just think that, I don't know. I'll die on the, I think Belichick and we'll figure it out. And you're right, Mikey. I think the 2 week against the Broncos, I mean, that was just an ugly game. But I think after that embarrassing loss, I think
maybe.
The Pats can put it together.
Okay.
All right. So let's get on to the Seahawks-Cardinals, the Sunday night game this week for this one. And NFC West showdown here between one of the best offenses in the league, really two of the best offenses in the league, I guess, with these two teams. But Russell Wilson, front runner for MVP, does he keep that front running going with a win against the Cardinals this weekend?
Absolutely. He keeps going. And this is a great Sunday night game. I like this matchup a lot. You know, here comes the Cardinals, though, right? Sneakily 4-2, right? And you know, we're talking about these teams that we think are fantastic, the Buffalo Bills. The Cardinals have the same record as the Buffalo Bills. I don't know. Like, Kyler Murray has been pretty fantastic, right? Like, I know we watched this Monday night game, and, like, it started off really bad. But he was the best player on the field by a long shot. And I think he's one of the most talented players in the league. So the Cardinals 4-2, this is actually like a big game, right? This is first and second place in the NFC West, what we consider, I think a lot of people consider the best division in football right now is the NFC West, I would say, with those four teams. And the next one we're going to talk about here. So I think the Seahawks are really, really good, right? I don't know if they're fantastic. I don't know if they're the top best team in the league. That pass defense is scary, right? They don't have guys back there. Like, people, everyone is throwing the ball on them.
Yeah.
But we look at the Cardinals, who actually struggled probably the 2 weeks prior to that Monday night game, and they go in and put up a bunch of points on the Cowboys, and we're like, wow, the Cardinals are awesome. You know, everybody puts up points on the Cowboys, so what do you make of that? I think probably this is a close game, right? I think that, you know, in Arizona, it's going to be close. Normally, if it's a close game, I'm looking at which quarterback is going to make the play. And there's really maybe one quarterback being Patrick Mahomes who I would take to make the play over Russell Wilson right now. And I'm not even sure if I take him over Russell Wilson right now. So I got to go with the Seahawks here. I'll go Seahawks 31-24.
So let me check my notes here real quick. I have one word written, danger Russ. All right. So two terrible defenses and the best player in the NFL right now.
Ooh.
Yeah. Stamp that. All right. I think. Yeah. Well, right now, I mean, play. Okay. I mean, all right. If we're different, I'm talking right now. Danger Russ is playing the best football in the NFL. And I think that at the end of the day, everything you said is right. I think it's like good, you know, pretty good offenses, terrible defenses.
Yeah.
But I mean, that Seahawks offense is on a different level right now. I think that, you know, what worries me is D-Hop. I think D-Hop could destroy that Seahawks secondary. But at the end of the day, I'm taking Danger Russ. I think that I think it'll be high scoring for sure. So give me, I would say, Seahawks 34, Cardinals 24.
Yeah, and that's the biggest thing that scares me too is D-Hop, because obviously that Seattle secondary has been as bad as it gets, and you're talking about probably the best receiver in football coming up for this one, and Kyler Murray, who's been very good so far this year.
Yes, he has.
Not always through the pass, but also with his legs. So that concern. That concerns me, man. It does. But like you said, I think the veteran and really the best player in the league being on your team in this game in particular matters, especially when we expect it to be so close.
Yeah.
So I am going to take the Seahawks in this one. I'm going to go 33-28 Seahawks. I think they get probably a late score or something like that. I think Russell Wilson does make the play in this game to give the Seahawks the edge.
Nice.
And then for the Monday night game, we have coming up this week, the Bears and Rams, which probably coming into this week, we wouldn't have expected these two to be, you know, one of the marquee matchups of the week. But here we are, especially the Bears coming into this one. So Bears, Rams. I believe the Rams are home for this one. Rams at 4-2, Bears at 5-1. Monday Night Football. Todd, who you got in this one?
All right. To me, this is a pick 'em. I'm taking the Rams. I think that, I don't know. I'm not going to lie. For a couple weeks straight now, I've been thinking, are the Bears really going to go 3-1, 4-1, 5-1? Here they are. At the end of the day, I don't know. I like the Rams team. I think the Rams, I mean, obviously we love Aaron Donald, probably front runner for Defensive Player of the Year right now. I think that the Rams can put it together and get this win, but I don't know, man. Hey, Big Dick Nick is, he got his nickname for a reason, man. He got his nickname for a reason, and even if it's not pretty all the time, he's a winner. I think that's what he's proven, and the Bears worry me. The Bears have, I mean, especially, I mean, they can get pressure. I mean, Khalil is still Khalil. They can get that pressure. I think that it'll be a close game, but I think I trust the Rams a little bit more than I trust the Bears right now.
Yeah. What, I mean, like the Rams are, you know, you talk about the Bears and how hard it is to assess them. And every week we're thinking, are they really this good? Right. We don't really know. The defense looks great. And Nick Foles is doing just enough. But I think the Rams, too, like, I think I maybe even have more question marks about the Rams, right? Like,
yeah.
Are the Rams a good team, right? Because I think coming into this year, I was very high on the Rams in the previous shows that we did. And, you know, looking at them this year, it's like, okay, well, like, they're 4-2 right now. They really should be 5-1, right? There was that bogus pass interference call that went against them, so that cost them a game. I mean, that's football. That happens. But really, just looking at it like that, you could make the case that they should be 5-1. So I really like their team. I think they have a lot of playmakers on defense. If this game was in Chicago, I think I would take the Bears, right? That kind of fits their style a little bit more. You take this in LA, in the Dome, the new Dome, which is a very nice stadium, very pretty in there. I think I'm going with the Rams here because I don't know how that Bears defense is going to fare against that offense. And albeit that offense hasn't been fantastic, but I think they do enough here. And Nick Foles, I think, gets goaded into a couple turnovers this game against the playmakers that the Rams have on defense. Not necessarily a great defense, but they have playmakers, right? Aaron Donald, Jalen Ramsey, you think about the guys they have. So I'll go Rams here as well. Let's go, what do you think, 27-19? How about that?
I am also going to go with the Rams. I'm going to make it 3-for-3 here. I agree with Mike. I think if this game was in Chicago, I'd probably be picking the other way. Mm-hmm. But to piggyback off what Todd said, I think I trust the Rams offense a little bit more, with McVay and the way they can kind of scheme guys open and things like that and kind of make something out of nothing. So I am going to go with the Rams in this one because they're home. I think it's going to be close, though. I'm going to go 27-23 Rams come away with the win in this one. So for the rest of week 7, we're going to do a rapid fire pick 'em where we pick each of the games here. So we'll go down a slate. We are going to do this also on Twitter. So on Sunday, I'll be sending out, a thread of week 7 pick 'em. So make sure you guys are following us on Twitter at @all_in_pod. That'll be shown here throughout the bottom of the screen as you guys are watching. But just rapid fire, let's go through these games. No scores. Let's go Lions Falcons to start. Who you got, Todd?
I think you said Falcons.
What was that, Todd? We lost you a little bit.
I apologize. Give me Lions.
Lions? Okay.
Lions, hell yeah.
I'm also going to go with the Lions. The Falcons are awful.
Browns.
Yeah. Browns versus Bengals.
Bengals.
I knew he was going to do that.
It's
the Browns.
Doesn't matter.
The Browns beat up on the Bengals. Baker Mayfield loves playing the Bengals. That's the only team they beat.
I'm going to take the Browns in this one, too. I think these are the types of teams that they beat. And no Joe Mixon, I think that matters. We did Steelers versus Titans. Let's go Panthers, 3-3. Saints, 3-2. Who you got?
Panthers.
Saints. I like the Panthers a lot. I do. I like their team, but they're just – I mean, the defense is not that good.
Yeah. I'm going to go with the Panthers, though, even though that defense is so bad. No Michael Thomas. So I don't have a
punching people and shit. What?
That. Yeah. So and apparently now he's got a hamstring injury. So it's for a Michael Thomas fantasy owner. I think one of you is.
Mind your business. Mind your business.
Oh man. So yeah, I'm gonna go with the Panthers in this one as well. Bills versus Jets. Is there any doubt of who's gonna win this one?
Josh Allen, MVP. Possibility.
Well, I think that boat has sailed with the last two games. But I think this is a team that they beat up on. Yeah, I got Bills.
I'm going to go with the No, I'm kidding. It's the Bills. let's go Cowboys versus Washington football team.
Give me Cowboys. Andy Dalton bounce back week.
Andy Dalton bounce back week. He can only bounce so high. I got Washington here. I think Kyle Allen or whoever is playing quarterback, whether it's Kyle Allen or Alex Smith, are both better than Andy Dalton. And I actually like the Washington pass rush against this Cowboys line that's been really banged up.
I do too. I'm taking Washington football team mostly so that we can stay atop the division. Packers versus Texans.
Packers, baby. I think Aaron Rodgers, revenge game. He is mad about what happened. Aaron Rodgers all day.
I like that case for the Packers. I'm going to go Texans here. This is a absolute must win, right? They're 1-5. They need to start winning games. And I don't think that this is a team that's a 5-11, 6-10 team. Deshaun Watson is one of the five or six best quarterbacks in the league, according to me. So I think Texans actually get an upset here.
Okay. I'm going to go with the Packers. Simply, I just think they're flat out the better team overall in this one. So I'm going to take the Packers to hold off on the upset.
I got two words for you, Mikey. Romeo Crennel.
Yeah, he's not a great. No.
All right, so 4-2 Buccaneers versus the 3-2 Raiders. Todd, who you got in this one?
Give me the Raiders. Right. I like the Raiders.
I like the Raiders. They're like super frisky, right?
Frisky.
They're just a fun team. They're frisky. Gruden against his old team, I like that. The Buccaneers defense is legit, but Raiders at home, they've been really good.
So for me, I think the offensive line, how many of them are going to be available matters here. Unfortunately, since we don't know that, I'm going to assume that they are, because most of them were sent home for close contact, not for actually testing positive. So I'm going to assume that they're going to be back, and I'm going to take the Raiders as well. I do like the Raiders in Vegas. Now, if they don't have those guys, then I would flip, because Tampa Bay's defense is really good, and I don't think you can have most of your starting line out against that defense. But I'm going to take the Raiders, assuming all healthy. Let's go to 5-1 Chiefs versus 2-3 Broncos. Who you guys got?
Chiefs. Patty Watt.
I'm tempted to take the Broncos here because of what we know about the Chiefs and how they tend to play down a little bit against some teams.
Yeah.
I think I'd be taking the Broncos with those 8 points, but I'm going with Chiefs to win the game.
I'm also going to take the Chiefs and make it a clean sweep. And then last one we have for week 7, 1-5 Jags versus the 1-4 Chargers.
Oh, boy.
This one should be good.
It's got to be the Chargers for me. Jags are bad, man.
No, Jags. Listen. The Chargers are going to charger. They can miss a field goal. I don't care. Anthony Lynn, was it like 4 games so far they've lost by single digits? Yeah, that's a folder. That's a folder. Yeah. Give me the Jags.
I like that rationale to a degree. But if we're talking about missed kicks, I think the Jaguars just signed a guy who had never kicked a field goal before.
Yes, they did. Yeah. Sure. So I'm going to go with the Chargers in this one, mostly because they're the home team. Jags going cross-country doesn't bode well for them. So right. I am going to take the Chargers to round out week 7.
Okay.
All right, so remember, guys, you can follow us on Twitter @all_in_pod and participate in our Week 7 Pick'em thread. And we're going to transition into some baseball here, but first, let's talk about the All In Network a little bit. So make sure, if you guys are watching on YouTube right now, make sure you hit that subscribe button. If you're tuned in on Facebook, head on over to our Facebook page. Leave a like. Make sure you follow our Facebook page. So we go live every week on Mondays and either Thursdays or Fridays for each of our newest episodes. You can get information on any new articles that drop, any of our other podcasts like All in Politics and Reign and Bliss, or the Beast Gaming podcast as well. So anytime new content drops, we're going to let you guys know on our Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram page, which you can find all of those available there at the bottom of your screen. If you're watching, if you're tuning in, Twitter, we're @all_in_pod, and All In Network on Facebook and Instagram. So let's get into it. Let's talk a little bit of baseball. World Series game 3 tonight. Before we get to that, let's talk a little bit about the Rays coming back in game 2 with a win over the Dodgers 6-4, tying the series 1-1. We've got ourselves a series here. Mike, we talked about this. We both expected this to be a close and entertaining series. I took the Rays in this one. You took the Dodgers. Are you sticking with that prediction?
I am. I am sticking with Dodgers in 7, like I said before, and you had Rays in 7, I think. I think it's going to go 7, right? Looks like it. Game 2, though, I think the Rays deserve a lot of credit. Blake Snell, one of my favorite players, one of the most popular players on the Rays. If you look at his stat line alone, you might think that it actually wasn't that great of an outing. He only went 4 2/3, gave up 2 runs. But I think it actually was probably his best start of the playoffs so far. You know, really, he was no hitting them for 4 2/3, and then he gave up that 2-run homer. He struck out 9 in his time, so there was a little bit of lies in the box score there. He actually pitched really well. I think that bodes well, because he's probably going to start another game in this series, especially if it goes 7, like we both predicted it would.
Yeah.
And this is why baseball's cool, right? Because you have guys just step up, right? We talk about these stars like Mookie and Cody Bellinger, who both went 0-3 in this game. I think that says a lot about why the Dodgers lost. But for the Rays, like it wasn't Randy who hit the home run. It wasn't Choi. Like, it was Brandon Lau, who was terrible all playoffs. He just found the swing. Like, that happens in baseball. Sometimes you just find the swing, and he hits 2 home runs. Wendell hit the 2-run double. Like, guys step up for the Rays over and over again in these playoffs. And that's really the difference in this game too. And I'm still predicting that the Dodgers guys have more, especially when it comes down to it later in the series. But also Dustin May, who I viewed as maybe not the most reliable pitcher on this Dodgers staff, but if you're just talking about pure stuff, I think he's probably the best pitcher on the staff, right? He's got the 99 two-seamer that runs about a foot, and he's got the slider. Like, he's got the best stuff. He was not good in this start, right? He didn't get out of the second inning. But, you know, he pitched like a rookie, right? But he's probably, if we go seven games, like I just said, going to have to pitch again. So how does he shake out of that as well? So I think we learned a lot in this game. But I'm still going with the Dodgers here. I'm excited because I think it is looking like it's shaping up to be a seven-game series.
So I'll say that, yeah, I mean, before the series, I'll be honest, I definitely think seven-game series, but I picked the Rays. I definitely thought the Rays were going to win in seven. I thought this was going to be a knockout series. But I don't know. After watching two games, I get that, you know, the Rays pulled out game two. It's 1-1 right now. But I think I changed my mind. I was wrong. I think the Dodgers pulled out in seven. I think that the Dodgers hitters, I think, are too good. I think that that lineup is crazy. I think I trust them. And Kershaw, this is probably so cliche. And again, I'll admit that I'm not the biggest baseball fan in the whole world, but I think that this could be the defining series of Kershaw, maybe, right? He steps up in a big game, he puts him over the top, and this could be how we remember Kershaw. Couldn't do it. Puts him over the top here in this series. And again, like I said, I picked the Rays, but I think I was wrong. I think the Dodgers end up taking this, like, series total. But game three is a toss up. I mean, at the end of the day, it's a toss up. I'm not sure.
Yeah. So I'm on the fence about this series as well. I was coming into it in the first place between two really good teams. Mm-hmm. The Dodgers scare me. They do. That lineup that they have is lethal. They have an excellent staff as well. You know, like we said, on paper, the stars look aligned for the Dodgers to win it all this year. But that's exactly why I picked against them in this. For some reason in baseball, it just always seems that you get the underdog wins or the team that isn't quite built like that on paper. But looking through these first two games, the Dodgers do look like the better team. I'm going to stick with my prediction, though, because when I flip-flop, it tends to come back and bite me. So I'm going to stick with my prediction. I'm going to stay with the Rays in seven. I do think they'll eventually, you know, pull it out. So let's talk a little bit about game three coming up here between Dodgers and Rays. So let's start with keys for game three. Todd, what are your keys for tonight's game?
Oh, he's muted. You're muted, Todd.
Mike, you're on mute. I mean, Todd, you're on mute. Sorry.
I'm sorry. I can't. I mean, the Rays pitching staff has to step up here. I mean, I think that if they can carry over some of the things that they got from that game two performance, I think they got this. But I mean, that's what they rely on. The Rays rely on that pitching staff that needs to step up big. Yeah. Will the Dodgers hitters, you know, can they step up? I mean, this is the playoffs. Who's going to step up here? But I think for game three, if I had to make my prediction, I think probably maybe the Rays get this one.
I'm taking the Rays in game three, too. And I know I have the Dodgers in seven, and I still expect them to win the series, but I do expect the Rays to get game three. And the reason is the pitching staff, just like to what Todd mentioned here, starting with Charlie Morton is going to be starting this game. And Charlie Morton, you know, as I've mentioned before, former Pirate great, certainly wasn't this good with the Pirates. But he's become this postseason legend, right, from his time in Houston and now in Tampa. Like, he just steps up in the playoffs every time. He's really pitching his way into the Hall of Fame these last couple of years just based on what he's done in the playoffs. It's actually unbelievable the way he's turned his career around. He is an absolute gamer. And, you know, you have Buehler going for the Dodgers, who's probably more talented, right, kind of like Dustin May in that sense. But in this big moment, I think I'd rather have Charlie Morton. And then if it comes down to, you know, even if it's 2-2 after five, I like that Rays bullpen a little bit more right now, you know, with those stable of guys. So I'll go Rays in game three, but I'm still taking the Dodgers to win the series.
I am going to go against you guys in this one. I'm going to take the Dodgers to take game three tonight. I trust Walker Buehler a little bit more than I do Morton. in this game. Not much, mm-hmm. but just a little bit more. I think he's the more talented pitcher.
Yeah.
Whether that actually turns into a win is will remain to be seen. But I think the Dodgers lineup does get it done tonight. So I am going to take the Dodgers in this one.
Right.
I'll go 4-2. I think it's a little more low scoring than it has been in the first couple of games, and take the Dodgers tonight. But still got the Rays in 7.
And it's hard to pick against the Dodgers tonight, right? Because you look at that lineup and what they did on at the offense. So it was Wednesday night. You know, like Mookie goes 0-for-3, Bellinger goes 0-for-3. Now Seager and Muncy step up, but like you can't. It's tough to expect them to do that again, right? It's tough to expect Mookie or Cody to go hitless 2 straight games. So I totally understand that pick. But I'll go Rays for this one.
Same.
All right, so. Let's close out today's show with some NBA news. We can't talk about no NBA with Todd on the pod, right?
Right.
So some big news for the Pelicans. Stan Van Gundy is returning back to the sidelines to coach the New Orleans Pelicans. So with the current roster that they have, I'm not sure that there'll be too many moving pieces for them. One, let's talk about how we like the fit. Here and how it's going to impact these guys. So Todd, I'll give you the floor first. What were your thoughts on the signing of Stan Van Gundy?
I have 3 big letters, MEH, meh. It was a meh hire. He's a better broadcaster than he is a coach. I'm sorry.
Agreed.
At the Pistons. I mean, I get it. He was the executive, blah, blah, blah. I don't care. It was a disaster. They are the worst off team in the single league right now. And I don't think I think you can put a lot of that on Mr. Stan Van Gundy. At the end of the day, the last time I was on here, we talked about Doc to the 76ers. I like D'Antoni. I think D'Antoni in the modern NBA can at least bring wins to your team. I think Stan Van, God bless him. Good luck to him. I think that it's going to be tough. I think Zion, and I know this, I'm not going to go crazy on the pod. No, I just think that Zion may not be the Zion that we think that he is, okay? I'm worried that, like...
That's not what he texted me.
All right, you're right. It's not what I texted you. Yeah. But I'm just saying. I think that Stan is in a tough position. I think the track record... I think he was a great coach once upon a time. I just don't think that this is... Like I said, this is a meh hire to me.
Mike, your thoughts?
Well, I just want to clarify on Todd's Zion comments. Actually, what Todd really thinks about Zion is Zion equals bust. Zion, 0 All-Stars. Can't stay in the league. So Todd is off the Zion train. Now, I will say this. You guys both know how I feel about hiring previous coaches, previous GMs. I typically am on the side of, you know, if he lost before, he's probably going to keep losing. Try to hire a new guy who hasn't quite done it yet and give him a chance, not only to give him a chance to maybe expand the league, you know.
Is that because of Nick Nurse?
No, I think that is a good example, right?
Yeah,
right. I think that is a good example. But I also think that, you know, when you have these rehires, they tend to not work out. But I think sometimes it is appropriate. I think this is an appropriate hire for right now. So super experienced guy. He's dealt with a number one pick superstar before when he had Dwight Howard in Orlando. That actually worked out kind of well. Yeah. So I think maybe that makes sense from a mentoring. You know, he's been around for a long time. He can help with all those young guys. Now, as Todd says, I don't know if he's going to win a lot of games. I don't know if they're really trying to win that many games right now. I don't know if they're looking at this season or even the season after that and thinking, let's try to make the Western Conference Finals. Let's try to push for the finals, because I don't think they think that's realistic, especially when you still have LeBron and AD on the Lakers and the Warriors are coming back and the Clippers have you-know-who. Like, I don't know if they're thinking immediately, let's go win 60 games this year. They're probably thinking, who can we have come in mentor our guys, right? And I think – but on the other hand, I think that was also the plan with Alvin Gentry, and that didn't work out. So maybe they're just trying to go in a little bit different direction. I would agree with Todd's meh assessment. I think it's meh.
Meh. It's hard to win 60 games when Zion plays 30 of them.
Yeah. Well,
Not a fan. Yeah. So I agree. It was an average hire for me, and especially for a young Pelicans team. I feel you there, Mike. I think this would have been the case to go with a young coach or someone who hasn't quite done it yet. Like, of all the coaches that were available, like, why not take a shot at Sam Cassell?
Or
some of these other guys. Ty Lue was out there, and you know, who knows what kind of coach he is without LeBron. We're going to find out. Actually, I'm going to throw that curveball at you guys here in a couple minutes. But, you know, what about, you know, Patrick Ewing, who's been doing it for so long? I know he's at Georgetown now. But, like, what about these other coaches who have been longtime assistants, you know, who haven't been head coaches yet, haven't gotten the opportunity to prove themselves? Why not see what those guys can do, especially with a young team that we don't expect to contend?
Yeah.
For me, this is kind of the hire that you would make if you wanted your team to be like in the, I don't know, top five seeds in your conference, right? That's the reason you would bring in someone that has this kind of experience, if you ask me. But is he an upgrade from Alvin Gentry?
Yes.
Yes, because I don't think Alvin Gentry is the good coach. But, like, I don't know. You know, it certainly doesn't move them up in the Western Conference rankings, if you ask me. I still think they're fighting for the eighth seed, and a lot of that depends on Zion's health. You know, granted, Todd has a point. He has to be healthy for them to win games. So that matters more than really who's going to be the head coach, especially when you go with a hire like this. And if you look at, I think it was the Pacers who hired Nick Nurse's assistant. I'm blanking on his name right now.
Doesn't matter. Nobody can pronounce it.
Yeah. I was going to say, I probably wouldn't have been able to pronounce it anyway. But, like, why not him? You know what I mean? Why not guys like that to come in and see what they can do with a young nucleus like this that doesn't have a ton of expectations on it? That would have made more sense to me. But I don't hate it. I actually like Stan Van Gundy a lot as a person. I love his tweets. He's been a social justice warrior throughout the entire bubble.
He was really good commentating.
He was a very good commentator. But as a coach, not 100%.
Sometimes you run your course,
To get serious for a second, too, and I don't like the rehires, right? I bring it up all the time, like whether it's GMs, NBA head coach, NFL head coach. Like, I'm usually against the rehire, right? And part of that is because they've proven that they lose. That's a big part of it, right? But also, like, when we're trying to address this stuff, that's important, right? Like, so there's six black NBA head coaches right now.
Yep.
Out of 30 teams, the league is 80% black. There's six head coaches.
Disgraceful. Yeah.
Well, like, part of the reason is because we keep doing these rehires.
Yeah.
Like, at some point, we have to start pushing people to the side and saying, okay, you had your chance. Let's give someone else an opportunity.
Yeah.
And that's across basketball. That's in almost all sectors, right?
Exactly.
But at some point, we have to start doing that. And I think the rehire is a big reason why that progress has been a lot slower than what people hope.
And it comes down to relationships. I mean, you know, whatever. You just make relationships and whatever. People feel comfortable, all that stuff. But, yeah, I totally agree. I mean, I was about to interject. I love the Pacers hire. I think this is a perfect Pacers hire. Like, you're not going to go out. You're not going to get D'Antoni. You're probably not going to get Ty Lue, whatever, man. I think that the best case scenario is probably them getting Nick Nurse's assistant. I mean, I love that hire.
Yeah, I always like when a team takes an assistant coach or takes fruit off of a tree that clearly, you know, works. You know what I mean? Right. Like, taking somebody off of Popovich's staff, or Nick Nurse has proven that he has a winning formula there in Toronto, taking guys off of that staff. Like, I love those kind of hires. I'm a big fan of that.
That Belichick staff ain't worked, though.
Yeah. So, true. It doesn't always work, but sometimes it does. One of the teams that didn't do that was the Clippers, as they hire Ty Lue to replace Doc Rivers. Which begs the question, is this an upgrade for the Clippers from who they had previously? Todd, what do you think?
Yes. I think yes. I think that the only reason it's an upgrade is because a year of disaster. Like, I mean, I just think that, like, at the end of the day, it's not necessarily about Ty Lue. I think it's more They had a year of disaster. I think these guys come back with a different focus. I think Ty Lue comes back with a different, like, he's able to be like, I'm not the voice necessarily you heard last year kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think the Clippers at the end of the day have some decisions to make though. I think it doesn't come down to Ty Lue. It comes down to a lot of roster decisions that I am not necessarily sure of one way or another. So I like Ty Lue higher though.
Executive of the year.
Well, this, yes, like you, yeah, that is true. He did get that. But I just think that it's not going to come down to Ty Lue. I think Ty Lue was a good hire. I think it's better than a lot of the hires they could have made. And I think that it's going to come down to a lot of roster moves.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree with Todd. I think sure. It's an upgrade as far as coaching matters when your team is already that good. Right. So when your team is already that good and your roster's good, they got the big decisions, right? With Trez and Lou Will, what they're going to do. Coop, question. Did they trade Paul George?
They did not.
No. Okay. Then it don't matter if Ty Lue is the coach. It doesn't matter if Ty Lue is the coach because Paul George is going to fold in the playoffs. So I don't really, you know, it's like this thing is like, is Ty Lue suddenly going to fix Paul George in the playoffs?
Right.
Pandemic P.
Yeah, right. Pandemic P, like, I don't know. I don't know if this moves the needle for me.
Yeah, agreed. I don't know that Ty Lue necessarily. Yeah, I mean, I think it is an upgrade from just a standpoint of that different voice in the locker room. I think that matters, especially coming off an abysmal loss like they had. I think you had to go in a new direction, and Ty Lue will shake things up. I think it's kind of a, you know, he's a similar coach, if you ask me, to Doc Rivers as far as his coaching style and philosophy. But yeah, like you said, I don't think who's sitting in that chair really matters for the Clippers all that much, unless you have a Steve Kerr, a Nick Nurse, like someone who's a true game changer from the sidelines. You know, those kind of coaches, I think, would matter more. And for the Clippers, but mm-hmm. at the end of the day, Paul George just has to not be a scrub in the playoffs. Kawhi Leonard has to be much better.
Don't count on it.
Right. And Kawhi Leonard has to be better than he was in that second round, if you ask me, and throughout the playoffs in order for them to be better. I think they need to do something about their center position. Their true centers, Zubac, cannot defend in pick and rolls. And ultimately, that's what you have to be able to do in today's NBA. Mm-hmm. And he can't, and Harrell can't. So
they
can't
resign the sixth man of the year, right? They cannot resign him.
Harrell can't be on the court.
Yeah, well, see, that's the thing. So, you know, you got Harrell and Lou Will coming off your bench, and they're both defensive liabilities. You know, so how do you fix that? Right. So,
and even it's like, okay, Harrell, like, okay, you're going to give him $18 million, Todd?
Oh my God. I just threw up again. No.
I think they are.
The Hawks. Like, I think Mikey said that the Hawks are about to give him $18 million a year.
Exactly. He's going to go to the Hawks. Right? Yeah, exactly.
Something now. I mean, it's bad, but I just don't like, I don't know the moves at the same breath. I was one of those people, you know, during the pandemic break. The Clippers have a shot. I mean, we can't go too far. They have a shot. They still have Kawhi and Paul George. If you put the right pieces around them, I mean, they are as dangerous as anybody. And I think that at least they get a chance to retool. And you know, as a obvious Laker fan, I'm definitely still worried.
Yeah. Did they trade Paul George, Coop?
No, they did not trade.
Now, it's over for them.
All right.
So we're going to end today's show with a little bit of breaking news. I like to do this when we go live. The AB is visiting the Bucks this Saturday. And according
up on my fantasy team,
according to the notification I have here, both sides are highly motivated to reach an agreement. So it would reunite AB and Tom Brady in Tampa Bay. Mike, you're all team abused.
Well, here's the thing. Okay, first of all, let me just say, I would be on the side of I don't think if I were a team that I would want to touch AB. I don't think I would even want to bring him in. And especially if I was Tampa, right? Because, like, does he even make Tampa better, right? Like, they already have a guy. I mean, he probably does, right? He's Antonio Brown. He's probably one of the best.
Can't stay healthy.
But he can't stay healthy. He can't stay not committing sexual harassment either. Oh, like, there's a slew of things. And we don't even know if he's going to be able to play when he gets there, right? So he's I think the league had him out until at least week 8 this year, but then that can actually get extended if he does sign with the team. And I think it probably would, because he actually hasn't actually served any of that suspension from all that stuff that was going on with him. So, like, I'm not sure if it makes that much of a difference or if it moves the needle. I probably wouldn't bring him in. I will say he's, you know, as a Steeler fan, he's the best receiver I've watched, you know, footwork-wise, quickness, hands-wise. So I think that makes a difference, but I wouldn't touch him.
And he's been out of football for a while, so I don't love that. Like, how many guys really take that much time off of football and come back and are, like, the same player, especially at his age? You know, I don't love that.
He's a crazy person.
Yeah, I mean, you're taking a big risk, if you ask me, bringing a guy like that into your locker room. And granted, he's been quieter, you know what I mean? Like, he hasn't been all over social media like he was when he first had all this happen. But, like, of course he has been, right? He's been trying to get back in the league. So any sane person, and maybe he has a little bit of sanity left. Any person with a little bit of sanity would understand that. But, like, as soon as you bring him back in, I think you bring those problems back. You know what I mean? Like, it's almost like bringing a drug addict back into, you know what I mean, that same environment after you release them from rehab. They're bound to make similar mistakes. So, you know, I don't love it. And like Mike said, there's still a chance that he won't, you know, be able to play because they haven't even finished their investigation on the sexual assault thing. Like, his suspension really wasn't even related to that. So who knows what they end up finding out, and what kind of suspension there is for him in the future. I mean, I guess it's a low risk deal when you're talking about the money aspect. Like, he's probably going to get a veteran minimum, whatever that is, to come play here. And they're obviously not going to rely on him a lot. They have Godwin and Mike Evans. So at best, he's going to be their third receiver, I would assume, even if he does come in. So I don't know that expectations are super high, but it could be a move that pays off big for them if everything works out. But that if is a big if, you know what I mean? Like, not only does the football aspect have to work out, but, you know, he has to come in and not destroy the locker room as well. And that's probably the biggest question mark that you have about Antonio Brown.
So I could not feel more differently. So, I mean, not in the sense that, like, AB is a crazy person. We all know this.
Yeah.
I think that any football team right now, I mean, okay. Thinking going as the suspension doesn't go longer than week 8. But the idea that we could sign this person that potentially he could be playing the second half of the season for me. Mm-hmm. I 100% am a chemistry person. I believe in chemistry and all these things. If you bring this man in for 1 week, 2 weeks, and he's crazy, I don't believe that'll affect chemistry. You can cut him. It'll be that simple.
Yeah.
Or as far as football goes, you could be bringing in a elite receiver. I just think football specific. I think a lot of other sports are different. You can bring in this man to a 53-man roster, give him a chance. The moment he is crazy, you cut him. And guess what? The owners don't care. It's not a huge cap deal. Whatever.
Yeah.
He is worth that chance. He is worth that chance for the Bucks. He is worth that chance for the Seahawks. He is worth that chance for, I believe, almost any team in football. At the end of the day, you can cut him. It's not a huge cap responsibility. I think that the fact that we're in week almost 8 of the football season, I don't know that, like, if you brought him in week preseason, I think that could be a real compatibility, whatever. But the team is who they are at this point almost. Yeah. And I think you can cut this person if they don't contribute. And I think at this point, I know he's crazy. I think he has every incentive to contribute at this point. And not saying he won't still be crazy.
Yeah.
It's worth a shot, in my belief. It's worth a shot.
Nah, it might be. It very well might be worth a shot because of what you say about, like, you could just cut them, right? Now, I will say this. Do you know who is not that good at controlling a locker room and typically has pretty very undisciplined teams is Bruce Arians. He coaches some of the most undisciplined teams in the NFL, not turnover-wise, but penalty-wise. It doesn't seem like he's great with having good control over that. Yeah. But, you know, if they bring him in for 2 weeks, he's crazy and they cut him, then,
yeah. I succeed that point to you 100%. Arians, oh, my God. Again, reflection. I just want to say this real quick.
Yeah.
People were super hype on the Bucs after that Green Bay win. That Bears loss, oh, my God. That Bears loss was incredible at how bad, undisciplined. So, yeah, right. I succeed that point 100%.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, my thing is, AB's probably not going to be crazy in the first 2 weeks, right? Like, he's going to come in, he's going to be the Good Samaritan for, like, 3 to 4. The issue is, like, once he gets on the field and he starts developing chemistry with teammates and becomes a major part of your offense, and then week 17 or first round of the playoffs is when he has his meltdown. That's where you're looking at, you know, where he would be a killer to your team. Because, like, he's obviously, you know – there's a reason he hasn't been acting that same way. It's because he wants to get back into an NFL locker room. When he does, initially he's going to try to be the best teammate he possibly can. It's when Tom Brady throws a pick at the goal line to a D-line, you know, something like that.
Well,
and that causes that trigger, you know what I mean? That triggers that meltdown. That's when it's going to be like, okay, well, how does AB handle situations that don't go well for him? Yeah. Is what I'm concerned about.
Well, throwing the ball downfield in general is not Tom Brady's strong suit at this point in his career.
Or knowing what down it is.
Or knowing what down it is. Or not kissing your son on the lips.
Shout out Joe Biden.
Yeah, leave Joe Biden alone.
Oh, my God. All right. So, any other thoughts left on AB and a possible reunion with Brady coming up this weekend?
Don't do it.
Probably don't do it.
All right. So that's an excellent place for us to wrap it up today.
Yeah.
We appreciate you guys tuning in to another episode of the All In Podcast. For those of you listening on audio, make sure you leave a rating, a review. Make sure you're subscribed to our feed, depending on what feed you're listening in on. We appreciate you taking out of your time, taking time out of your day to listen to us rant about some sports. For those of you watching on YouTube, don't forget to hit that subscribe button. And for all listeners, make sure you follow us on social media. If you're watching, you've seen them scroll across your screen throughout the episode. Twitter @all_in_pod, IG and Facebook, both All In Network. And then head over to the All In Network website to find our merchandise stores. As you can see, I've got the white hoodie on today. So if you, are a fan, make sure you grab some merch from the stores. You can also grab Rain and Bliss merch from the website as well. You can find the audio versions of our podcast and our blog, which our weekly blog writer, Mike Burton Moran, on the Not That You Asked But blog. You can also find my latest article on Kamala Harris's prosecution record. A lot of fact checking done there to give some context behind her prosecution record. So you can find all those details and information on our blog at allinnetwork.net. And that's a good place for us to stop. So signing off, my guy Todd, thank you again for joining us for another episode.
Thank you for having me. Joe Biden, Kamala Harris, 2020.
Yeah, Joe Biden and Kamala Harris. Let me say real quick, Coop, if you know, we've been seeing a lot on TV and stuff about making a plan to vote, right? And you might be thinking to yourself when you see that, you don't need a plan to vote, just go. I'm just gonna go vote. Okay, just so you guys know, me and my wife tried to go vote early today. There was a 2-hour line voting early, right? A week and a half before the election.
Yeah,
and it's only those lines are only going to get bigger as we get closer. So seriously, make a actual plan with work or whatever you need to do. This is an important election. You want to make sure you're in there because you don't want to show up and have to wait in line for 5 hours on election day or something.
Call 5 friends, see what they're doing.
Yeah. Yep. Reach out to your friends. Make sure They get out and vote as well. It's the most important election of our time. I fortunately was able to vote already here in York. I voted about a week and a half, about 2 weeks ago now. Luckily the line was short because it was 3 weeks, but as it gets closer, those lines are going to get longer. I still advise get in there before election day because those lines are going to be ridiculous. So I already cast my vote. I voted for science. I voted for a woman's right to choose. I voted for for Black people to have civil rights. I voted for the legalization of marijuana nationwide and expunging marijuana records. All those things matter, are up for grabs here in this election. So get out and vote, and make sure that you tell your friends to get out and vote as well. This is not the year to let someone who's crazier than Antonio Brown back into the office.
So you vote for Trump? No, I'm just kidding.
And he's not kidding.
All right. So thank you guys again for tuning in to episode 48 of the All In Podcast. We will see you guys again on Monday.
Peace.